testing, 1, 2, 3, testing. This is the interview on January, God, I hope we're, okay, we have to start. You arrived January 31, 1978.
I left, arrived in Washington early in the evening on Tuesday the 31st and had a late dinner with Doug Fraser, president of the UAW, his wife, and a few others. The occasion of his being in Washington was attendance at the annual legislative conference of the UAW. And the next, it was the end of the second day, their final session was the next morning to terminate around noon. And he asked me if I would come to the morning session, share the agenda with Ted Kennedy, and speak to the delegates, which invitation I accepted. Then the next morning, I had an early morning breakfast with Dick Holbrooke and Senator Alan Cranston in the Senate dining room, at which we talked about the relationship between China and the U.S. and how, in Senator Cranston's opinion, how fast we could push it. Well, he was always optimistic in that regard.
He began to formulate, though, the time span as being after the November elections, as I recall.
Oh, yes. I don't think there was any disagreement to that, that the situation was too emotional, too confused, too complex to be properly thrashed out in the course of a congressional campaign, where the main thrust would be obviously on other matters. So that I don't know anybody who was in favor who did not hold to that.
But it was even at that time that we began to think through, if normalization was to occur, a window would exist by the end of the year and into 1979.
Yes, and that the time in 1979 would be relatively short, because it would begin then by the spring to spill over into the presidential politics,
right,
of 1980.
Right.
So the time possibility, the window, was not too long. It would have to be pretty well pinpointed to be successful. And then after that breakfast, we went back to the State Department and had met with Dick Holbrooke and Bill Gleistein, but they were in no way responsible for what I did at the UAW conference. I may have mentioned I was going there. If I did, it was just in passing.
Do you recall the subject of that meeting?
Again, the question of China policy, and to a lesser degree, the question of the DCM, but that was a very small part of it. I didn't really think about what I would say to the UAW conference until I was being driven over there. I was picked up at the State Department and taken to the Shoreham Hotel, and I decided, well, I'll talk about what is most interesting to me at that time, namely the relationship between the United States and the People's Republic of China, and the necessity, in my opinion, to push on towards normalization. I doubt if I gave much thought to the press. Historically, those legislative conferences had been attended on the opening session by, when you had a keynote speaker, quite a few of the press. But by their very nature, they were pretty dull affairs, not news, they didn't make news. And apart from the speakers, and nobody was from the press normally was there after the first session. Had I thought about it, Ted Kennedy appearing, they probably would have said to me that, well, there'll be somebody from the press there, but I just didn't think of it. And I decided to talk to them, as I always had, among old friends, and I said that our China policy was founded on an absurdity, namely the absurdity being that we recognized a government on the island of Taiwan in Taipei that represented all of China, and that by so doing and continuing this almost 30 years after the event, we were still participants in the Chinese Civil War, and then recited how we had withdrawn from that participation after being fully involved, after the communists had seized control of the mainland, washed our hands of it, but that had been turned around by the Chinese involvement in the Korean War in the fall of 1950, when we were threatening the Yalu River dividing China and Korea. Pointed out, of course, that we'd had all sorts of signals and that what would happen, and General MacArthur's convincing of President Truman that there was no problem involved, and that we should proceed to normalization with due regard for the well-being of the people in Taiwan. I might say that in the story file, that piece of it was left out, although we added that at my request to the statement that was put out by the State Department. I had, in fact, said that. And it was a big item on the television news that night, Wednesday, February the 1st, and also front page of the Washington Post and prominent in the New York Times. And the next morning, I was summoned to see Secretary Vance.
Had you been scheduled to see him before?
I had been scheduled to see him, but on a very indefinite basis. On the, you know, well, of course you have to see the Secretary every time I came back, but that time used to float around, obviously, to fit into to his extremely burdensome schedule. So that being front and center so early was obviously prompted by the publicity I had created. And the Secretary was quite upset. He was very tight-lipped, and although always a courteous man, he was clearly angry, not by what I had said so much as the fact that he was then scratching for every vote he could get in the United States Senate for the ratification of the Panama Canal treaties, and was very much worried that the surfacing of another major foreign policy controversy would impede that effort and give additional weapons to his opposition, or the opposition. And he asked me if I would object to the department putting out a clarifying statement at the noon briefing. And I said, of course I had no objection to that. And it had not, I'm quite sure, been prepared ahead of time, because whoever did it was called in and told what should be in it, and after it was written up, I saw it, and it was at that time that I remember that I asked to have the due regard of whatever it was for the well-being of the people on Taiwan inserted. The rest of it was to the effect that I had done this without clearance, and that I was speaking entirely for myself, all of which, of course, was true. As far as its impact is concerned, I'm reasonably sure that it had no impact, although certainly that morning I wasn't at all sure of it, because a few days later, the following Monday, as a matter of fact, Bob Strauss gave a reception in honor of Mike Mansfield, who was also back in Washington from Japan, for all the Democratic senators. And although there was a bad snowstorm that night, and not all showed up, quite a number did. And it was the kind of an affair that I got at one time or another to speak to almost each one individually. And obviously what had happened was a topic of conversation. And my feeling was that it created no problem with regard to the Panama Canal situation. Then after the reception was over, I stayed behind with Mike Mansfield and the Strausses, and there, the atmosphere was very positive, which was the first time I had any indication from Bob Strauss that that although I don't think he ever said anything publicly, but that he was on balance, I think, convinced that pushing ahead was
interesting.
A wise course.
That's interesting. At that time, was he already STR?
I think so, because my date book says Ambassador Strauss reception, and he must have been.
Have you? Did you know him for a long time?
Oh, you must have. I'd known Bob Strauss very well. He, when he was a candidate for chairman of the Democratic National Committee. I opposed him. The UIW opposed him. We were supporting George Mitchell from Maine, who is now senator from Maine. The FL-CIO was supporting Bob Strauss. And the night before the election, he called me up. I was in Detroit to say, "Well, I'm going to win. I want you to know that I want to work with you after this is all over." And he did. We worked closely together, and we developed during the course of his chairmanship a very close relationship. He, as chairman, he was, I think, scrupulously neutral in the. As the campaign for the 76 nomination moved along, although at first he was not too much for Jimmy Carter by any manner of means, thinking that he would not be a good candidate in the sense of a winning candidate, but did nothing to use his office in any, as far as I knew, in any regard, and. At the point he stepped out as chairman, seems to me that was at the convention, the 76 convention. Anyway, he had, yes, it was the 76 convention.
And one of Carter's people took over, wasn't it?
Who did become chairman?
That young fellow, Kit Dobell's wife,
oh,
the husband,
yeah, right.
Evian Dobell.
Right, briefly.
Mm-hmm.
But he had, Bob had let me know that he collected carving knives. And I had been in Stockholm not long before the convention, and I saw a magnificent carving knife set in this shop window, which I bought and presented to Bob. I remember when he accepted, he said, "Well, this is the first knife I've been presented by a fellow politician, but I didn't get in the back first." No, I had a very close and warm relationship with Bob Strauss, and that continued to this day. So the, had I been certain, or had it been very much on my consciousness that press was present, I suppose I would have used, I may have said somewhat the same things, but used more discreet language, certainly not as strong a word as absurdity. Although the next day, the day after I'd met with Secretary Vance and the disclaimer had been put out, and I had lunch with the editorial board of the Washington Post, and I guess it was, doesn't seem to me it was Don Oberdorfer, another one of their political writers, anyway, whoever it was, he was a senior person, and when I said, "Well, possibly I should not have used so strong a word," and he said, "Oh yes, I think you should, it summarizes the situation, doesn't it?" I said, said, yes, I thought it did well. And he said, stick to it. And there was a, if not the chief editorial writer, one of the top editorial writers was very, took sharp issue with me, not about what had happened, but about the whole concept of normalizing relations with the PRC and breaking with Taiwan. Very strong pro-Taiwan position. And at the time, I wondered whether he was doing this just to be challenging or whether, in fact, it represented his personal position. I gather it did.
Yes, I think that they did have at least one editorial writer who was inclined toward Taiwan. That strand of thought was reflected in Washington Post editorials throughout the Carter administration. There was an element of unpredictability in what the Post would say.
So that in some ways it was an unfortunate situation, but I think as it developed, it was fortunate. I've always had a lucky star, and I think that prevailed at this time. I might say when I went back to the department, the line staff was delighted to have the issue, particularly all those involved with the China question, who were delighted to have it brought out into the open. And I got many a sly congratulation, although I don't think there would have been much public support had anything happened.
As I recall, there was some consternation in the White House, too, over the political issue that concerned Vance, namely, would it cost votes for Panama Canal? And I think I'd called over to see what was going to be done about it.
Well, that certainly is understandable. And as I say, I had no feeling at all about... I know it was not Oberdorfer at the luncheon, because he talked to me on the telephone on two or three occasions during that week. He
was Howard Simon?
No, I know Howard.
Well, whoever. But,
one of their top people in any event. And then I spent the rest of those days going to see the people at the ICA, talking to the intelligence community representatives, and interviewing the candidates for DCM, attending the staff meetings.
Now, as I recall, we in the White House side and the NSC side were beginning to look at two particular issues, or three issues, on China policy at that time. The first was very preliminary planning for the Frank press visit. Did you get involved
in
that?
I was not aware of that at that time.
I think that was being held. This is a period when really...
No, I'm positive I was not aware of that.
Yeah, I think this was the beginning period of following the invitation of the Chinese to Dr. Brzezinski to visit China, the induced invitation. This is the beginning of strains, but particularly between Harry Thayer and myself. He began to feel I was cooking things up behind his back. And the planning for the Frank press mission was one of those. We began to gather scientists together under Frank Press's aegis. We recognized that the Chinese were entering a new stage, and we gathered an interagency working group presided by Ben Huberman, whom you may remember, and myself. Harry was very much opposed to that whole effort at that time, and saw it partly in institutional terms as encroaching on what state should be doing, and also on policy grounds that the relationship was not ready for something like this, that all we could do at this point was normalization and nothing on science. So that was one issue. The second issue was the Brzezinski trip, and the third issue was arms sales to China, by our European allies. And I'm interested on your trip, to what extent you were brought into any one of those three issues.
Well, the Brzezinski visit, yes, because on the 3rd of February, that's the day after I saw Vance and the disclaimer, I met with you. That's the first time, I think, that we met. No,
the
first time.
No, because we had met on the Vance trip.
First time you and I met alone.
That is correct.
First time
that we had met alone.
I came to your office at the over at the White House, and I think it was then you raised with me the question of it was either then or if you saw me just before I saw the president.
I may have raised it twice.
Yeah, because I saw you again the following Tuesday, the 7th of February, which was just like I stopped at your office on the way to see Brzezinski, and then
I went with you for your Brzezinski meeting.
You went with me to see Brzezinski, and then I went in to see the president. I had requested that I see him alone.
Right.
And I did see him alone, but when I got there, he asked if I would object if the vice president joined us, and obviously I had no objection to that. You may well have raised it on the 3rd of February. I know definitely you raised it on the 7th. Now, it must have been in the same meeting that I had with Vance on the 2nd of February that he raised with me the question of there should be no further cabinet-level visits to China. And it quickly became apparent that that had reference to Dr. Brzezinski. And that it would be well if I so indicated, if I had an opportunity to the president. So my memory of the visit on the 2nd is that his tension was quickly evaporated when I agreed to the statement and all the rest of it, because we then went into talk about a lot of other things, including that. And I felt a certain loyalty to Cy Vance. And I must confess that I had been propagandized on the question of the NSC and the State Department. In a somewhat subtle way, sometimes not so subtle as you've got to know people a little better. At that particular time, I was not sure of the value of another high-level visit, certainly not without adequate preparation. So I indicated, yes, I would, if I had the chance, I would indicate to the president, which I did on the 7th of February. And if my memory is correct, I went back after seeing him to Cees Big to tell him that I had so indicated, because he had asked me to go the other way when I was with him with you.
Right.
And I think at that point I temporized. I didn't say yes or no. And so I felt...
That's right. I remember that. Because was I present for the second meeting of yours with Spig? Maybe not.
I don't even have it down here.
But I think you may have stopped on, because I remember that. You refresh my memory that we were... somewhat disappointed, but I think the way we left it with you was that he would contact you, and he opened up the possibility of having a using his direct channel. We never had communicated with you by his direct channel, and I think we raised the possibility of trying to be in contact with you on this issue later, and you indicated a willingness to hear from us at some later point. We tried to open your mind on the issue.
Yes. And in that final session, when I stopped back to see him, I think I indicated that I was close to being open-minded despite what I had said.
That's right, and I was there for that.
Right.
That's right, I remember.
I had not said to the president absolutely no one should come. I had put it in terms of, well, I'm not so sure now is the time, that sort of thing. And then at the end of that week, I went back to my home in Rochester, and I've been in telephonic communication with my wife, who lives in La Jolla, in California, and we had finally agreed that I would file for a no contest divorce in Michigan, which, assuming a property settlement satisfactory to both parties could be worked out, would then take effect 60 days on the 60th day after the point of filing. Actually, I went home just for the weekend. I didn't do it at that time. I began to get ready to do it. I engaged a lawyer and commissioned him to draw up the necessary papers. That was it. Then I went back to Washington on the 6th, and that's when that evening attended the Strauss reception for the Democratic senators, and the next day met again with you briefly before we went in to meet with Zbig, and that was a fairly lengthy meeting. And then I went in to see the president.
This was your first exposure to Zbig, wasn't it, of a lengthy sort? You met him maybe briefly before you went out.
I had not met him one-on-one before I went out. I had known Zbig somewhat casually because I was a member of the Trilateral Commission. I only attended one executive meeting. That was in Brussels in 74, I think. And that was my, during those few days, that was my longest exposure to him. But again, that was all, any one-on-one conversation was during a break period, nothing of any consequence.
What preconceptions did you bring to your association with Zbig?
Well, in the Trilateral Commission days, my impression was that he was a well-organized individual who had considerable competence and knowledge, and I had a high regard for him, so that some of the negative comments I got in the State Department did not register completely with me. And in that meeting, the three of us had, there was certainly nothing there of a negative sort, and it would reinforce the generally favorable impression that I had.
What were the main things that people at State were saying about the NSC or about me or Zbig? Was it instant?
Well, it was more personalized with regard to Zbig, a cut-rate Kissinger, trying to play the Kissinger role and trying to undermine an excellent Secretary of State, and they weren't going to stand by and see happen to Cy Vance, what happened to Bill Rogers, that sort of thing, rather than any specifics.
And at me at that time, do you remember? Without asking who it was.
Yeah. Well, with regard to you, it did not come from one couple of places at the outside. And that you were playing Brzezinski's role and doing things behind State's back without regard for institutional and courtesies and civilized procedures, I guess you could, you could put it. That particular time, Harry Thayer had very keen feelings. Nuts sticks in my mind a bit later. I guess at that time, maybe before, Dick had some of those feelings.
Oh, really? It surprised me that it's that early for Dick. And I thought came out on this big trip itself.
I may be wrong on that. I may be wrong on that. Because sometimes it's hard to sort these things out.
Sure.
Because some of these things would be said banteringly, but you would know, well, when he says it, he means it. The others would just be kicking it around.
Yeah.
And in those gatherings in Dick's office when there'd be 6, 7, 8 people and you'd be constantly back and forth to the phone, they were quite disorganized and all sorts of things would be said.
The Holbrook style was inimitable.
How much was just fluff and how much had meaning to it, it's sometimes pretty hard to sort out.
I think a lot of it was exaggerated for most of the time, and my own feeling is that...
question of the visit, however,
that
was very keen about.
That was very intense. We'll go over that as we move forward here. Then you went in to see the president.
Right.
And what was, as I recall, billed a political meeting. The
I had asked, as I said, to see him alone.
Right.
And because I wanted to talk frankly about where we were and where I thought we might go, etc.
But it had State extremely nervous. I got calls from Dick. From the desk, asking whether it really was going to be just you and the president, or whether Zbig was going to sit in on the meeting. If Zbig were going to sit in on the meeting, then
Holbrook wanted
Holbrook or Vance himself, and so I had to promise that indeed it would be just the two of you.
Of course, what happened with regard to this meeting, at first, the previous week, I had asked State to arrange it. And when I left to Rochester for the weekend, it had not been arranged. It had not been arranged, as I remember, when I came back.
Didn't get the request.
So I personally called Tim Kraft.
That's right.
Who was the appointment secretary, and of course I knew Tim very well from the campaign trail, and said I would like to see the president and I would like to see him alone, and got the answer within half an hour. That's when State really got agitated. You say they didn't even put the request through. I see. But when I went in to see the president, first, just the two of us, when he said that I objected to Fritz joining us, and of course I said no. And that's when I said to him, president, you're not only my president, you're also my friend, and I would like to tell you some personal news before we begin. And he said, of course. And I said, I'm going to get married. And I'm marrying a member of the mission in Peking. So he said, what does she do? I said, well, she's the nurse at the mission. Oh, he said, and he almost jumped up and down in his chair. He was sitting in a wing chair. I was sitting on the couch. And he said, Admiral Rickover married his nurse, and they've been very happy. Then he reached into his inside coat pocket and drew out an envelope and said, what is her name? I said, Sharon Tui. So he writes it down. How do you spell Tui? I told him. And then we began our discussions. He began by saying, I read in the newspapers all the things you said about China. And I thought, remembering my visit 6 days before with Secretary Vance, that I was going to get, in effect, a reprimand. But he said, I agree with you. And we then began to talk about when it could be done. And quickly agreed it could not be done before the November election. And as we've indicated before, the time period allowed from the ending of the holding of the election, in which this had to be brought to a conclusion, if possible, had to be certainly before the preliminaries to the presidential primaries began, although at this point there was no indication of any opposition to him as the Democratic nominee. We weren't thinking about that so much as the multiplicity of candidates on the other side, the Republican side, and it becoming a point of agitation. And I think, finish this.
Yeah.
I think I said that it would, if possible, if it could be brought to a conclusion when the Congress were not in session, but obviously keeping in close touch with the key people, would be the better. And then we then talked about the relationship, the problem of SALT II. The assumption was that when we talked about post-election, the Panama Canal would be out of the way, and the president was, as I remember, was quite optimistic about that conclusion. And was his feeling that that the two things could go on parallel tracks, and instead of being a problem, could be helpful in a political sense. That
is the thinking of Hamilton Jordan being reflected in the president's mind too.
I see. I think the bulk of this conversation was behind us before Fritz Mondale joined us, although he joined us quite early. And I remember when he came in and he sat down, the mark of Jimmy Carter as a true gentleman, he said to me, may I tell him, meaning about my coming marriage, anyone else, let alone the President of the United States, would have just said, hey, Fritz, Leonard just told me that. He says, may I tell him? And I said, of course. And, but Mondale, of course, as I think we've observed before, was very much for bringing normalization to a conclusion. And in that term, in the first term, because his reasoning, in part, being that the Democrats had suffered for a generation for losing China, and if the relationship wasn't pushed to the proper legal status, and anything should happen to repair the fortunes as between the Soviet Union and the People's Republic, that then in the political sense you could have revisited on the Democrats for many years to come the fact they had blown the opportunity that had been put in place by a Republican president, Mr. Nixon. So that I left that meeting I think, too, the question of the Brzezinski visit or any high-level visit was touched on while the vice president was there. And I had been made aware, I think, at that time that he already had in mind coming to China.
That's right, he did.
And so that he, in part, I think, thought I was talking against him. Because I did not put it in terms of, I don't think Dr. Brzezinski should come. I put that I don't think now is the time for any high-level visit. The president may have raised the question. My memory isn't clear on that point.
I suspect he did, because I think that Zbigniew stimulated him to raise it, hoping that Zbigniew was looking for some way of breaking this logjam.
I think that's what happened.
Did you, in fact, talk about domestic politics in that meeting?
Yes, we touched on it. I remember my impression I carried away was that this man was serenity himself, despite all the problems that were gathering. They weren't that intense at that time. But he was completely serene. Then it was a couple of days after that I had lunch with Hamilton Jordan and Landon Butler in the White House. Were you at that luncheon?
Yes.
And in that luncheon, I tried to make as clear as possible to Landon the situation as I saw it.
That meeting, my memory was clarified, in fact, while you were talking earlier about your appointment with the president. I remember what happened. When you came over to see me in early February, 3rd, did you say the date was? You mentioned that you wanted to see the president.
Yes.
And so the normal procedure for a diplomatic visit by an ambassador was for state to put forward a scheduling proposal. I don't recall getting that scheduling proposal, but I asked you what the context was, and I think it was there that we talked about it as a political meeting, which would circumvent the normal procedures.
Exactly, yes, that's right.
Then I did not have, at that time, I did not know Tim Kraft. It took me a while to develop my contacts, but I did know Hamilton, and I called Hamilton and said you wanted a political meeting with the president. And I mentioned it to Zbigniew, and we set that appointment up, and it was my hope to go through that route and then have you see the president. And then you circumvented it by just calling Tim Kraft directly. But that was at least how I was planning to have the to work the system to get to the president, but you, and you were quite right in going directly to Tim Kraft.
I see on that same